I'm Erin Barnard.
And I'm Matt Edwards.
What's happening in North Idaho?
First, as always, is our small business shout out in downtown Coeur d'Alene, Migliori Olive Oil. This shop is amazing. Wouldn't you say, Erin?
Oh, definitely. I love that place.
It has the most amazing concoctions of olive oil and vinegars that the owner there thinks up herself, I believe.
I hope so. I don't know. It's so good. I don't care who thinks it up. I'm just glad it's available.
It is so available. You go in there and you can try all these different olive oils. You can try all the vinegars. And there's like, what I think my favorite is something called harissa olive oil.
Oh, yeah. I tried that one.
Yeah. Because it's got a nice spice to it, but it's not overwhelming. And it goes great on like, if you just pour it on some hummus.
There's like some really good vinegar too. Like I think there's a peach habanero
vinegar. Yes, yes.
Some spicy stuff. Ooh, so good.
Yes. And if you're a traditionalist, it's got excellent extra virgin olive oils and vinegars and stuff. So hop on down to Migliori Olive Oil in downtown Coeur d'Alene and check yourself out some fantastic culinary treats. What's on the rundown today, Erin?
We have a special treat for everyone. We have Senate-elect Ben Taves coming in. We're going to talk to him about his campaign going on because we have an election coming up, but he doesn't have an opponent. So it's an interesting campaign, I guess you could say. So tune in. Studio today, we have Ben Taves joining us. Ben Taves has been elected from the Republican primary in District 4 for Senate. So right now he is Senate-elect Ben Taves. You have one more election to get through. How's that going right now?
Well, I don't have anybody running against me in the general. So
pretty well.
Yeah, it's going pretty well. It's kind of a foregone conclusion that I will be heading down to Boise and representing District 4.
That's great. So that's my district. So thank you for representing me and my family. So because you don't have an opponent in the election, you're basically everyone's considering you as the next senator for District 4. So how does that work? Have you been in contact with anyone for, I don't know, anything? People think of you as a senator, right? So are you already doing like senatorial prep work for session, or I don't know. I've never been on this side of an election before, so I don't really know how it works.
Yeah, well, I've never been elected before.
Oh, so well, there you go.
It's somewhat we're in the same boat. Actually, I'm just trying to prepare myself as much as possible, because what I don't want to go is go down there for the first session and all I do is sit there and learn and I can't actually get anything done. So my goal is really to learn all the rules that I can, meet all of the senators that I can, learn the issues and talk to people and make sure that I can hit the ground running. And that's my main focus right now.
What was the, during the primary campaign, when talking to voters and what you think might have been the big hot button issues that people were going to vote for you for, how do you think those issues, taking those issues to Boise, is going to fare for you?
I believe so. I mean, first of all, what are those issues? I think is a fair question, and it was interesting because obviously last January, February, when I was first getting going in my campaign, it was still like the whole pandemic issues, health freedom, all of that was kind of still in the forefront. And so I was talking about that a fair amount as I went door to door, and it was amazing how fast people forget what I see major infringements on their rights and major government overreach. And yet a lot of people had already moved on. So I ended up talking a lot about school choice, which I see as a excellent way to deal with some of the indoctrination in our schools and the over-sexualization of our children. And so people were very passionate about that. They were on board very quickly. They could see how school choice could be an excellent solution because for instance, with education savings accounts, ESAs, you can take the money from the schools that aren't teaching kids what their parents want them to, and you can put that money somewhere else. And as we know, money talks. So when as soon as money funding starts to go away, I think schools will change. And the constituents I talked to, they were excited about that possibility. So I'd say school choice is a top topic. Another one would be property tax reform. People, you know, grocery tax repeal. Those things are obviously top of mind awareness with people as they're dealing with inflation. And so those were probably two of the main topics that
I Yeah, and you're going to have you're part of this group of folks going down there that's going to be tackling how this money is going to be spent, the money that was just approved, appropriated,
correct,
so forth, through that the bill that just happened a couple of weeks ago. So it's going to be up to you guys to figure out how that money gets spent, if it goes to school choice, if it whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. So I mean, that's that's a lot on your shoulders.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
Battle.
Yeah, there's a lot, and I mean, a lot of it comes down to what committees I end up on, and so the biggest question mark for me right now is, will I be on the committees that are actually dealing with the legislation that is most important to me? And I have no guarantee of that. From what I understand, it's seniority based. And so obviously I'm a freshman senator, but after they go through the seniority level, then you have essentially everybody draws a number essentially. And you end up finding out that you get a high level of choice in which committee you're in, or you might draw the wrong number and suddenly you're in a committee you don't care much about at all.
I can just see you in like agricultural
affairs. That was exactly the committee that came to mind when I said that. And not that, I mean, I'll do my best to represent my constituents in any committee I'm in, but there's certainly some that I'm much more passionate about than others.
Yeah, there's definitely a bigger learning curve in ag affairs over, you know, like education committee for you, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, if I could be in education, I'd love to be in that committee.
Yeah. I would love for you to be in that committee too, because I'm a huge advocate for school choice. And I think an ESA would be fantastic for Idaho. Yep. Because.
Well, it's similar to what they did in Arizona.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that there's a, I mean, you know, it's funny. There's so much assumption about what goes on in Idaho across the country. They go, oh, that deep red conservative state.
Right.
And then I just feel like we're just getting blown out of the water by what we see in Florida, what we see in Arizona, what we see across other parts of the country, that we just get
hammered.
And people don't understand the battles that are happening here. But obviously people are more awake. And when you say you hope to get on certain committees, and it's done by seniority, I mean, by my count, there's at least 13, maybe 15, depending on how the generals go with some of the contested races, freshman senators coming in.
Correct.
So, and they're all fired up too.
There's more opportunity to get on the committee I want than probably any time since the 1960s, as far as an incoming freshman senator.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's really encouraging, honestly, because we have so many new senators. I think that the people have spoken that they weren't happy with what was happening in the Senate previously,
right,
and they want to see some change.
Yeah.
That's so optimistic. I love that. I just love that positive, happy attitude.
Well, you have to realize that during my campaign, I would commonly say, hey, send me down there. I might be only one of two or three conservative senators, but we're going to have to start to build momentum. And I'm in it for the long game. I'll help other conservative senators run for office. And that's what I was campaigning on. And then election day, you know, comes and goes. And suddenly I realized that God put it on a lot of people's heart to run for Senate and also for people to vote for them. And so.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, the number of people who, now you've never held elected office, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, you were a precinct committeeman
before, yes.
but you've never held like city council, school board, dog catcher.
That's correct.
Anything like that. Yeah. And the number of freshman senators in that position is similar.
Yes.
And so talk about a mandate, you know, and you know, when I was in Boise a couple of weeks ago for that bill that was up, and there was, personally speaking, I don't know if we talked about this last time, but there was this like, did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
I haven't. No.
Okay. Well, for anybody who's watched Game of Thrones, the good guys, so to speak, are from the north.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the bad guys are down in the capital, the King's Landing, you know, that's what it was called. King's Landing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there was this feeling of like, when I was there, cause I'm coming down from the north, it was kind of like I was even asked like, are you from the north? You know, it was kind of like, yeah. And I'm just like down here and like, there's all these weird things going on out in the city and stuff. But when I look at who's coming down to Boise from the north, it is a Game of Thrones style happening.
I hope that's where the similarities lie, because I don't know if you've seen Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah.
Everyone in the north gets slaughtered. So
right. But that's where it ends. That's TV. That's TV. Yeah. But there's this just sort of like, I mean, what is going on in our state is real. You know, I mean, we hear a lot, you know, you hear from folks down. I mean, Josh and Kirsten talk about it on the flagship podcast, What's Happened in Idaho. They talk about how they, you know, they live in Canyon County, and Canyon County is sort of becoming the Kootenai County of the South.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously we're setting the tone up here in Kootenai County. But you look at, I mean, look at look who's coming down in terms of senator from the north. You've got Scott Herndon, and he has a Democrat opponent, but
it's not a serious race.
It's not a serious race. Yeah.
Good luck for that guy.
Yeah. So you've got him in one. You've got Phil Hart in two.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Doug O in three. You're in four. You've got Carl Bjerke in five. Mm-hmm. Dan Foreman has a tough race in six, and Cindy Carlson's going down there in seven.
Yeah.
And that alone, you know, I mean, that is huge.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
And are you in touch with all those folks?
I am in touch with them. And I'm actually going to go down and help Dan Foreman out. I'll take a group to go down and canvas and knock on doors.
Great.
And also hopefully do a phone bank as well. So
that's great. That's and awesome. What a time to run against Democrats right now.
Yeah, I know. it seems pretty easy to make the case that you want a Republican in office right now.
Right. Do you find, when someone asks you, do you find yourself there like, well, what's wrong with the Democrats? You find yourself saying, well, where do I begin?
Yeah, right.
You know?
Do you like paying $4 a gallon for gas?
Oh my goodness.
Just start with that.
Yeah. Right. So is there, I guess, and I don't want you to give away any like secrets or anything, but is there a united front of the sort of northern senators that are coming in? Like, are you guys in discussions? Have you guys said, you know what, let's try and go in as a block? Or are you just sort of saying, you know what, let's just, you know, get down there and communicate? You know,
at this point, we're building relationship with each other. And so I think that really it starts out with trusting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a fair amount of face-to-face interaction with each of the other senators and myself. And I think as we build a relationship, it'll be natural that that we'll work together.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I mean, just that list alone, they're just all friendlies. You know, they share the same values that we do, which is kind of unheard of when you're talking about state legislatures. So for that many districts to have a lot of the same values, it's great. So I'm really optimistic that the Senate can work together to get things passed this session. So I'm looking forward to going down there and watching it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a drastic change from what we saw in the last couple of years, where we were frustrated I know that I'm guessing a lot of the listeners were in the same boat as us, where you were sitting there watching things go through the House that you were excited about, good legislation, and then watching it die without even a hearing in the Senate. And that has got to change. And so that's, I guess that's one of my main focuses right now, is just making sure that we change that so that we can go down there and actually hear good bills and be able to actually vote on them.
Yeah. Even if they're a bad bill, like, talk about them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I feel like that some of that just felt like they were like, oh, I don't want to be on record, you know, as voting for it or against it. So let's just not hear it at all. And we'll all be labeled as such. And I heard a lot of just like, you know, what do they call it? Passing the buck, right? Like leadership would say, oh, well, the reason why we didn't hear this bill is because there wasn't enough consensus among the rest of the Senate, the body. Mm-hmm. And then the normal non-leadership people in the Senate would go, well, we didn't hear it because leadership didn't bring it forward. And it's like, you know what? We're done with that. We are done with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a foundational belief that my constituents should know what my viewpoints are. They should know how I will vote on different things. I should be consistent with what I tell them when I'm going door to door. And then it should be tested based on me actually voting on things down in,
oh my,
in you're, Boise.
You're going to revolutionize politics, Ben. This is incredible.
I hate the hiding. I hate the deception.
Yeah.
With both the campaigning, I see deception happening and where people's true beliefs are hidden. And then it's allowed to continue down into Boise, where people still can't figure out what they actually believe because they don't vote on things. So,
So what are you going to do? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
Well, we might, I don't know if we're thinking of the same thing. Like, do you have any plans on how to keep up that transparency level with your constituents when you're down in Boise?
Yeah. I've, my wife, Alicia, and I have discussed that quite a bit. And, the normal thing is probably like a newsletter or something like that. I don't love video. I'm just going to say that truthfully, I don't love, but, I do believe that it's a great medium for me to be able to communicate with my constituents regularly instead of, you know, waiting a week or two to talk to them. I could talk to them, you know, a few times a week. So one of my goals is to just communicate regularly, whether it's audio or video, or and then get feedback from my constituents.
Yeah, that's great. Well, on top of that, how are you going to keep your soul intact?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What I hear is that you have to be careful. Breathing in marble dust changes you. So got to figure out.
And there's geothermal energy, you know, coming up through the ground that heats the Capitol.
Sure. It does.
Yeah. So there might
be
something
in there. It's the only Capitol. I think it's the only Capitol building that is heated by geothermal energy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So there might be something in the water.
You'll definitely have to go to all the museums and stuff while you're there if you have time, because you learn a lot. There is a lot going on. My children really, really appreciate the museums down there. So hopefully you will too.
Yeah.
So tell me, so what is it? What are you going to do to make sure you don't like fall off the wagon? You know, like, how do you save your soul from selling out to the special interests?
I mean, first of all, I'm a principle-based legislator. I'm going down there for principles. I don't have anything to gain other than the causes that I'm fighting for. I believe that staying in touch with my constituents is key. Staying close to I have a core group of people that that I trust, that I value their opinion, and I think that staying close to those people will help me, you know, stick with my convictions. I somewhat know that there's a game going on, and that there's going to be different people trying to get me to vote different ways with interests that don't match with my constituents. And I'm just focused on my constituents. And it's interesting, like somebody at some point said, you know, you represent everybody in your area. And you represent all the voters. And in a sense, yes, I do, because I have that office. But in another sense, I really represent the views of the people that voted for me, because they're the ones who said that guy matches my viewpoints, matches my values, and they're the ones that are sending me down there. And so even though by default I represent everyone, I believe that I have to listen to those constituents who actually voted for me and stay true to that.
Amen. I mean, that's so refreshing to hear, because yes, you do hear the opposite. And I've been told that many times by a number of legislators. I represent everybody, so I have to take everybody into account. And it's like, yes, no, obviously, yes, of course you do represent everybody, but you nailed it on the head. Like, let us, the voters, squabble among each other on who is the best to go down there.
Yeah.
Because if, let's say Aaron and I are on opposite sides of an issue, and she voted for you because you're, what's that?
I said, I'll beat you.
And she voted for you because she agrees with your take on the issue, and I don't, why in heck would I expect you to vote how I want you to vote?
Right.
She won the argument in this case. Her and 51% plus, won the argument. So me and her need to hash it out. Or if I feel like I can sway you, then maybe I sway you. But then you have to be the person that says, you know what, Aaron? This guy swayed me, and so now I'm going to go this way, and then you can take up the beef, or I can, you know, like, right? I mean, I sound like a madman, I feel like, but I feel like that's the obvious answer. Is yes, you're accountable to your entire constituency, but it's the voters, you know.
Well, I mean, he won. A majority of people in this district voted for him, so I mean, that's democracy in action, if we want to use a phrase.
What was the tally? Percentage-wise, do you remember?
I was really close to 60%.
To 60% in a Republican primary.
That's crazy.
Close to 60%, and this was an open seat.
Yeah, it was an open seat. Senator Souza is my predecessor. She's currently the senator, obviously, and she had run for Secretary of State, so it was an open seat.
Right.
My campaign really fits with what I'm saying. I mean, what I call my campaign was a relational campaign. Like, I was knocking on doors, meeting people, and it was, I mean, really wonderful experience for the most part. I realized how many cool people we have in our community, and I met so many great people. I looked forward to knocking on doors for the most part. There was a few bad instances that made it harder to get going again.
Yeah.
A couple that come to mind, but for the most part, I mean, we just have a wonderful community with a lot of common values and passions about what matters.
Yeah. Well, and you had how many trucks did you have around town? You probably had like five.
Oh my gosh. Semi-trucks. That was the best part of the whole campaign.
I only had one, but I.
What? I saw five trucks parked around.
I parked it strategically.
Yeah, you did.
That was so fun to go around town and say, oh, there's the Ben Taves truck. There it is. There it is. I would take pictures of it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and for people who are listening, describe the truck, because it wasn't just like your F-250 or whatever you have that has a decal on the side.
No, it was a giant panel truck. It's like a box truck, and so it was like a giant billboard, and I had my name on both of the long sides of it. So yeah, you could park it strategically anywhere on a main road, and people definitely saw my name. And I actually kind of mapped it out and made sure that I hit each area for at least a week.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fun. That's my father-in-law. He's an ideas guy. He's an inventor. So he was like, why don't you, he already had the truck.
Oh, okay.
So let's
wrap it.
He's like, why don't we do this? And I'm like, that's a great idea.
Oh, it was great.
It was a great idea. And you had some of the most, I don't know who put up your sign. Your signs are still up, which is fine, because it's a general election.
Oh, I saw them everywhere.
They're Ben Taves was everywhere. Of course, people pronounced your name incorrectly all the time. How does that sit well with you?
I'm so used to it. Yeah. I'm so used to Toes. And I actually think that when I was going door to door, I would be like, it looks like Toes, but it's pronounced Taves, like T-A-V-E-S. And I honestly think I got better name recognition because people had to think about my last name in that process.
Smart.
So when I'm explaining how to pronounce it, I think they'd probably more memorable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they feel smart. They're like, oh, I know him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pronounced Tate.
Shut your mouth, get in line, just behave or pay the fine. They're pulling on your back.
your spine. They want you weak. Don't speak, don't question, don't think. Keep staring at your smartphone. Get dumber every week. Now give up your freedom and shush. Oh Jesus, what happened to us? Kill your faith, judge the skin and learn to hate. Make yourself the enemy, but call yourself a saint. Learn the rules, be a fool.
You told me so many stories about this, the relationships that you had created just by going door to door. And I have one. My husband told me a story about election night. I was at the clerk's office watching the ballots be counted, but my husband and my son put together an election watch party at Life Coffee that mm-hmm. night. And Lucky said that he saw you and your family ride up on bikes mm-hmm. to come and hang out with them at Life. And he said that was the most wholesome thing he had ever witnessed in his 43 years was your family riding up on bikes to Life Coffee to hang out with everyone during election night. So.
Oh yeah, we love it. So we've also done that over the years. We'll like all ride our bikes to church. Usually our church is close enough that we can ride our bikes there. So during the summer, yeah, we'll be on our bikes a lot of the time.
So is your family going to join you down in Boise, or are you just going to go down there by yourself?
It's sort of complicated. We wanted them to join me the whole time. But it has become really apparent that there's just so many with kids, like, my 12-year-old son, you know, he's in basketball and I don't want to pull him out of that. And my second daughter is 15. My oldest daughter's out of the house and my second daughter's 15 and she's in speech and debate. Mm. So that's tournament season. So if I was to pull them down to Boise, it would really, really cause a lot of upheaval in their lives. It was interesting. I was driving down the road in my truck with my four kids and with me. And, one of them goes, Dad, are you really going to be gone for 3 months? And I'm like, yeah, 'cause we hadn't talked about it. I think it was starting to sink in and they're like, so every night you won't be home. Oh. And, it made me start to count the cost, like realize there's a lot of sacrifice for this. And I love my family so much. And I think it's not bad because I want my kids to know that there are things worth sacrificing for. And I think about military service. They're away from their family sometimes for years and see them, very periodically. So there's things that are worth sacrificing for, and this is one of them to me and to my family. And so I feel like they're gonna feel a little bit of the sacrifice themselves, but I want them to know there's a higher cause that's worth it.
Wow. Yeah, the impact, especially on your young ones, the impact. Mm-hmm. The older ones are probably like, yeah, Dad's gone, but but the younger ones, I mean, it just shows how the dynamic of your family. You know, I mean, biking up, you know, election night, yeah. Riding bikes, you know, your young ones questioning how long you're going to be gone. I mean, it just shows the I don't know, for me, it's just reinforcement of like the moral character that is missing in a lot of politics today. And that's not to say that there's people out there that don't value their family and value their time with their family, but there's a lot of nefarious things that go on and we can't deny it. So knowing that there's someone like you that has these strong convictions, you have a moral fiber, you've got a great foundation with your family, your support system, and you're from Kootenai County is all a good things for this state. And I hope everybody listening out there is excited to have you come down there.
Yeah, I'm sure excited to go. And I feel really honored to be able to represent our community. And to me, it's something I take with really the utmost seriousness. That I'm actually going to be able to do that. So I'm excited.
Now I want to talk a little bit about the speech and debate club that you are a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to that, because you're a part of that, and I imagine that was something that you did in your youth as well.
I did, yeah. High school, I competed just briefly in speech and debate. I was more focused on basketball and football originally. And at one point, in a football game, I blew out my knee.
Oh my gosh.
And it kind of set me on a different track. So
that's like, you ever see that movie Election? Uh-oh. Is that what it was?
No.
Election with Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. But anyway, there's a character in there who's a football player, and he blows out his knee, and then he runs for office.
Wow, interesting. Yeah,
that's so crazy. Yeah, I need to watch that.
School, you know, like school president, high school. Anyway, I digress.
But that's exactly, that's what happened. I was on track. I would have focused on sports, but instead I ended up spending a lot of time on Business Club and DECA.
Love DECA.
Yep, I did. I was really involved in that, and then speech and debate as well. And my dad at the time, he's like, you know what, son? This is setting you on a different track, but
well,
that's not necessarily
now.
A bad thing. And
yeah.
I was never going to be a college or NFL football player anyway, right? So so the reality is that I think it set me up to leverage the gifts that God's given me.
And so did you have, at that time, did you have any aspirations of running for political office in the future? Was this something you're like, oh, so maybe someday I could do that? Or did this sort of percolate because of the current status of life?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what started it. Yeah, I started struggling. I did Lincoln Douglas debate, and I started wrestling with the values in our society and thinking them through, and did panel discussion, was a speech competition. I call it the art of interruption, because really you had to like wait for somebody to take a breath and then be right on top of it to not interrupt, but contribute to the conversation. And, but yeah, I think it started there. And then in college, I was involved in the student government and really enjoyed that process. I was a political science major pre-law at NIC. So yeah, definitely started me in this direction.
Wow.
Wow.
What do you have there, Erin?
So
Erin's been fishing through her library back here.
We have the library all set up, ready to go. And I just remembered that you and I went to high school together.
What?
And I have
my
high school yearbooks. Well, you know, I knew him back then a little bit. He was in a different grade than I was.
Gotcha.
But then that was so disconnected from how I know him now that I don't even connect the two.
Fair
until
enough.
It comes up in conversation.
Yeah.
And so just behind me, I happen to have my yearbooks. And
I
was like, oh God, what is it? I remember. Yeah. So I found
pictures that you don't want to remember
yearbook.
Sometimes.
I found, I'm sure they're available somewhere, but if you ever make me mad,
let's see the photo. Let's see it. We got to see this.
He's so cute. He's a little baby.
He's a baby. Where's he? No way. Oh man, look at that guy. Wow. So wait, now so you were doing sports at this time. Wait, is this your senior year photo right here?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's incredible.
So yeah, my senior year, I didn't do football. I don't even know if I did basketball my senior year. I was focused on what was next after high school at that point.
Yeah.
Now, who are the rest of these yahoos? Now wait, so this is Aaron's yearbook. That means Aaron is in here somewhere.
I'm
so where were you? Were you
years,
a junior?
No, I was a sophomore.
You were a sophomore?
Yeah,
and I don't know your maiden name.
Oh.
So do I just need to like go through all this? I don't know. I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it here. I found you.
Wow, that was fast. That was so really fast. I can't believe. Oh yeah, look at that.
That's awesome.
How about your son's
That's
in studio
so funny,
too.
Yeah.
Has he seen this?
I don't think so.
There
My
you go,
daughter
buddy.
Check has, but like, he has never even.
He's going to have to find it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is once they start reading the comments in there.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. I still have my yearbooks too. I should go back and read those.
I need to go read them.
I had a lot of friends in high school. So I should break that out and let my wife read those so she can remember that I am actually a really good guy. And people like me.
Yeah, I know. People liked me back then, too. And then I, you know, spoke out.
Imagine that.
So that, you know, I tried to get my son... the speech and debate thing is really important in our life right now. One, because part of our homeschool curriculum is debate. And so my daughter went through debate last year and is doing it again this year. But I've been trying to get my son into the debate club for the last couple of years. And I had signed him up for the camp that they have to go through in the summertime.
Yep.
And then our fire happened. So he didn't get to go. So I'm crossing my fingers that he'll get to go next year. But I need to, I want to be a judge again. That was so fun. During COVID, all the judges left. And so there was no one to judge. So I was asked to do it. First time in my life I had ever even gone to a debate that was not on TV. And then they wanted me to judge it. So
that's awesome.
It was great. I had a great time. They were the smartest 17-year-olds
these kids are fantastic. I went to the KCRCC dinner.
The Lincoln Day dinner.
There were three, right?
Yeah, two of them are actually were from our speech and debate league, and one was not, but now she has since joined it. So now they're,
And she was great too.
I was talking about that dinner and those speeches last night because I'm still super impressed. And that was in February? And that's what I think every child needs, is to join a league like that.
Absolutely.
To really get those critical thinking skills honed in and understand how to make a point or a counterpoint.
Yep.
And to do it in a civil manner.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, imagine that. I mean, you know, you go online and have debates online and instantly, you know, you're just like, it devolves into just total mayhem.
Chaos, yeah.
But this civil discourse, because we should be a society that disagrees. Are you kidding me? Like, we should have disagreement because it's the only way to get better.
That's right.
Yep. You know, I'm sure if we sat here for another hour and just talked through the issues, you and I will find disagreement somewhere. Mm-hmm. But we can make our way out of it, or we don't. And we just say, okay, well, let's keep working on it.
We need our viewpoints and our ideas challenged as well. So, and what I love about the debate, and I coached it for quite a few years. And so one year I had my students, there's a resolution that comes out at the beginning of the year, and they would look at the resolution and almost always they would be like, oh, this is going to be so difficult on the affirmative side or on the negative side, because they had a natural inclination towards one side of the resolution. Mm. And so I'd be like, all right, write down your, which side you like and why, and put it in a sealed envelope. And then I would have them at the end of the year, open the envelope to see if their ideas had changed about it. Because throughout the year, they have to defend both sides.
Right.
And guess what happens when you go through and you defend both sides and you have to look at both sides and struggle with the resolution? You end up you're going to have new information. You're going to have your viewpoint either solidified or changed, and either one can happen, but you'll be solid in whatever you end with because it's been challenged and tested.
Right. Yeah,
it's crucial. This is what makes me confident that you are the right person to send to the legislature, because there's not a lot of people that can do that anymore. And you are just immersed in it every which way possible. And so I have really high hopes for this next session.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement, grassroots excitement about what's to come. Mm-hmm. And you can see it by the reaction that a lot of people had with this special session that happened a couple of weeks ago, and the governor presenting this bill, because people were, people had a lot of questions like, why is this happening now? You know, why is this special session happening now? You want to address inflation, and inflation is in a crisis mode right now. Mm. But did you really address inflation?
Right.
Like getting a flat tax at 0.2% lower than what it was and all this other stuff. And why are you doing it with probably the biggest turnover in the state legislature in a long time?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm hyperbolic here by saying half the people were leaving,
right?
You know,
yep.
And they're going to dictate this bill and stuff. And I know it wasn't half, but it kind of felt that way when you looked at, especially the co-sponsors of the bill. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those folks that were co-sponsoring that bill were leaving. So,
so
you can see that we are in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely felt like they were taking decisions that would have been made in the future and pulling them back into the existing legislature.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have my own thoughts about that. We talked about that a little bit last week too, and I wish that things would have waited for next session, but it is what it is. So we just deal with it moving forward.
But Ben's going in there with a bunch of other folks, and they're going to be appropriating that money. They're going to be, you know, there was a few promises made by a lot of folks who were returning as well, who were there to vote on it and are returning. And you know, I was really happy, and I want to ask you this, how happy you are. I mean, Idaho has a flat tax when it comes to income tax.
It's certainly progress.
Yeah.
I could see why so many people, so many legislators were excited about at least part of that bill, because it moved us to a flat tax that people had been working for years and years. So that's the tough thing about what I would consider as a multi-issue bill, which goes against at least the spirit of the Constitution, at least the spirit of what a single issue bill is supposed to be. And it made people vote for something that some of them I don't think completely agreed with.
Well, if you could go in and push to even lower that flat tax, would you?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. I mean, looking at ways to lower taxes and shrink government has to be, I mean, I think any Republican's goal based on our platform.
You would think.
And I mean, it seems, it's interesting. I go back and people, you know, throw around words like rhinos and all these other things. And I don't use that terminology often or flippantly, but when I look at the actions of legislators or people in the executive branch, and then I compare that to the Republican platform, when I see a total incongruence or at least a significant one, I do start to think, you know, these people don't actually represent the Republican Party well at all.
Yeah. And either either it's because they want to cater to their entire constituency rather than their voters.
Yep.
Right. To simplify it. Or they realize what some have already admitted to, which is the only way to get elected in Idaho is to run as a Republican in most districts.
Yeah. I think you see that a lot. And that goes back to my previous comment about deception.
Yeah.
Is that there's a lot of deception in Idaho. And what bothers me the most is the true belief systems, the true values of the constituents not being represented because people are lying about who they are and what they believe. And that's just completely wrong. I want to be completely transparent. I want to make the votes. And if people vote me out, so be it.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I don't represent their values, then that's understandable.
Right.
That's not what I want. I want to further those values, obviously, but I believe that the vast majority, if everyone was to vote, if we had more and more people vote, I think that we'd find out that there's more and more conservative Republicans actually out there.
Right.
You just hit the nail on the head right there. We got to get more people out to vote
that
live there, not just randos.
Right.
Yeah. Let's be specific.
And speaking of live there, so District 4, which is Coeur d'Alene. It's all of Coeur d'Alene.
It's like Coeur d'Alene proper.
Coeur d'Alene proper.
Correct.
Most of Coeur d'Alene proper.
Yep.
So when we look at that primary that happened, you had an open seat in the Senate, and then you had the two the two House seats. Both incumbents were up for re-election, and all three of the what we call the more conservative candidate won.
Correct.
And by a good margin.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some races that were pretty close.
I guess so. Yeah. But that being said, you know, what does that say about the district? What does that tell you about a district that traditionally up here in the north, we know these more densely populated cities tend to be a little bit more progressive.
A little more purple.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would say that.
Especially when you look at the city councils.
Correct.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. talk about the group not necessarily representing values of their constituents.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
But
which, by the way, and I hate to interrupt you, but it's what's not lost on this is that the two that won, the two House seats,
mm-hmm.
were the two conservatives that lost.
Yeah,
in the city council,
in the city council mayoral race. So if that wasn't a referendum on what happened during that election,
well, I mean, the tides are turning.
The tides really are turning. Yeah,
and that on that point, it's kind of ironic too that the city voted in the less conservative candidates,
right?
And then the people are like, no, we want these people, so we vote them into the state legislature, and now the city council that they you know, the more purple city council now has to work with these legislators that they didn't want or they were running against in the first place. So
that's right. That's right.
Interesting dynamic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be
so
fun.
So what so when it comes to District 4 and the two now, one of them doesn't, they both, no, one of them has an opponent, right? I think just one has an opponent. I think Joe Alfieri might have put it. But regardless, they're going to win.
Right? I haven't looked in so long. Yeah,
because it goes Republican.
Yeah.
They might both have an opponent. Yeah. I know at least one of them does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, the likelihood is all three of you are going to be going.
Correct.
And so when it comes to representing District 4, what's your relationship with them? Do you feel like you have a strong relationship? Do you feel like you guys are going in, you know, in a somewhat united front as well?
Yeah, I'd say that in the majority of areas we're like-minded, and I get along with them very well. I like working with them, and I think that goes a long ways. Like I said, that a lot of this is built on trust, and from the stories I've heard, there's a lot of backbiting, a lot of promises of people saying they're going to do one thing and then doing another. And so I think that having those relationships where you trust these people is very helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. Is there anything else that we should hear from you, Mr. Taves? Aaron, what do you got?
Oh, man. Well, we can kind of go forever. But what has been the biggest surprise in this entire campaign process and really pre-senatorial process for you that you had no idea about?
Good question. The first big surprise was I thought I was running against Paul Amador.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my gosh.
And then, and nobody even really told me that this kind of thing happened where on the filing day, and it was actually 2 or 3 hours after it looked like I had no opponent at all on that date. And then 2 or 3 hours after the filing deadline, suddenly the document pops up and shows that I have a new opponent who I had spent a lot of time researching Amador and looked at his voting record and a lot of things. And then suddenly I had a new opponent. It totally threw me off. It was a super big surprise. But
so Paul Amador had, did he file his paperwork early? Like he was running for that position again? I can't remember.
So he announced,
I think he announced
that he was going to run as for Senate. And then he switched on that.
That's right.
On the filing deadline.
That evening.
Correct. Yep. That's where he came out clearly as running for his existing seat. So that was a big surprise. The other thing that I'd say was the biggest surprise to me was I never actually met my opponent. That's not how how I envisioned running for office. I always thought there'd be debates and there'd be forums and you'd get a chance to.
But that's probably because she didn't live here, right?
You know, maybe.
You don't have to answer that.
A lot of other people said that. I never pushed that, but I know that a lot of other people did.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, there were some questions.
Yeah, but that is fascinating. Yeah, you're running against somebody. You want to, again, have a debate. You want to talk through these things. You want to give voters a clear distinction between both
of you. Yeah.
And there was now, did you put a call out? Or
so there was multiple different organizations that tried to set up debates or town halls that would have been a forum where we would have at least answered questions from the audience. And from what I can tell, that was just, they were just declined. I always said, sure, I'll be there. Let me know when. And they never materialized. So wow. that was the biggest surprise. I envisioned running for office very different than it turned out to be.
Wow. Wow.
Well, that's good to know. That was kind of a shock. I was almost had popcorn that night watching the final candidates pop up on the Secretary of State website. Yeah. And then all of a sudden everything switched at the last second.
Yeah. There were a few races around the state where it was like, "Whoa, look who dropped out," or "Look here," because you know there were some where it was like five different people were running, and then it was like, "No, you leave, no, you leave," and and you know, and you got to give props to the KCRCC for their vetting process, and their commitment, or at least their I don't want to say it was like their demand or anything, but their recommendation that if we want to be a united party, if we truly want to find the best candidate possible. Then if you're not recommended by the committee, that we ask that you drop out and put all your support behind the recommended committee.
Correct. Yeah. Imagine that. Conservatives believing in the principle enough that they would put their own ego below that value or that principle they're trying to uphold. I see it sickens me when I watch races split between two conservatives and then a more liberal or progressive candidate. Ending up with that seat that I know doesn't represent the people.
Yeah.
And that happens all too often. So I think it's really admirable that they're doing that. There's always going to be some controversy involved, and there's going to be people with hurt feelings and all of this. But I think that the process of vetting people against the Republican platform is a legitimate way to look at it. Like, 100%. How well do you match up? And how well do you match up to this? It's not like it's a subjective as much as if what they actually say. It's hard to know what they actually believe, but I think it's a fair way to look at it. Like, how well do you match up to the platform? How strong of a candidate are you? Those are legitimate questions. And then how else are we going to keep people that are pretending to be Republicans just because only ours win in the state? How else are we going to keep that, you know, make it actual Republicans that get into office?
Right. Great. All right. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining Aaron and I today. It's been a fantastic conversation, and we totally look forward to the, I don't say coronation on November 8th, but you've got a clear path down to Boise. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Preaching the street for the Communist Party. Pro-choice, no voice, never mind the heartbeat. Dictate, race bait, agitate, mandate. Dress and drag and burn the flag, then run and find a safe space. Tell us how you feel until we give you what you need. Call everyone a presser till they're on their knees.
And that's it for us, right, Aaron?
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Right?
I just had so much fun listening. I just want him to talk forever.
I know, it's good.
It'll be great to hear him on the Senate floor this session. Which is something that we've desperately needed, is people to actually stand up and debate from a conservative viewpoint. We had poor Christy Zitto almost on her own little island down there in the Senate the last couple of years. So it'll be fun to see the debate happening on the floor and in the committees this year.
Yeah, there's some brilliant people hopefully headed down there. There's some more races to look at. Dan Foreman, as Ben had mentioned. Also David Worley down in Pocatello. That's another brilliant mind that we need in the Senate. And then there's a lot of firecrackers coming as well. So it's definitely going to be an exciting legislative session if you're into that sort of thing. So.
I'm a nerd. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll catch everybody next time.
Bye. Too much masculinity, so we're goodbye to family. Represent the 1% who want to overthrow. Till everybody lives in an autonomous zone. Steal stuff, smash another window. Loot store, get more, grab another brick. Though. She, her, he, him, they, them, they, them. Women are the men now, and the men are now the women. Make yourself a slave until you feel like you are free. Dig yourself a grave for the American dream.